Alright, time for another DoNotGod.com video presentation. So, whatever his name is, Mari Hari, philosopher, whatever, blah, 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 talking some about antinatalism here and there. And so he's talked to David Benatar. So, frankly, from my perspective, Benatar kind of lost relevance from the time he did an interview with Sam Harris, and he pretty much got so mushy and inspecific and indirect in everything he said that you could just see that this isn't going to go anywhere, because he doesn't really believe they're real victims. And if you don't believe the people being forced to live when they weren't asked, that you end up being forced to be conscious and be a member of this human fun group thing, even the civilization, we have a right to even reject that, and we're not given that right, frankly. So if you don't consider being imposed upon as a crime, then fine. There's no point in even talking about the subject, frankly. So it's sort of like somebody saying, I don't have a preference to lick somebody's feet, okay? It's not my thing. I'm not into that. It's just foot licking, so who cares? If it's not a crime, if it's not a bad thing, then I'm just not a footlooker. So everybody's just going to say I'm anti-natalist, in the sense that, I don't have a use for a kid. I don't want kids. It's no big deal. If somebody else has them, I don't care. So, and that's pretty much what it's come down to. So anyway, so he's created a kind of useless thought experiment, like a trolley question or something that's supposed to challenge our ethical capacity to cognitively understand and come up with a relevant statement about, why the hell can't this select? It's always something with these computers. Come on, select this. Yeah, it's just a little bit off, see? Makes a big difference. Not really. All right. Anyway, so let's just play it. I'll metaphor. All right. So he's got this. He's posing a question that ends up just being a euthanasia question. So he's using an example of him and a guinea pig named Marzipan, and you're almost like, why bother? Why not just make it you and a child, even a retarded child? And so you're going to die, and you're the last surviving things in the universe. And, should you take the retard with you? Because, frankly, it's not going to do well without you. And so it's just a simple ethical question. I mean, if I do have a graceful enough way to kill it, I don't have to sit there and bash it with a hammer or something. The logic would be give it some never wake up berries or something. Some kind of graceful thing. It goes to sleep. It just never wakes up. It seems like the right thing to do. So lots of people have done this. There was a guy I actually interviewed as part of Vloggerdome, a doctor who, his wife, got captured by the industrial complex and, was wasting away in a nursing home, and he couldn't get her out. And so one day he just took the shotgun and ended it all for both of them. And so some people would say this is a horribly violent, evil person, and now I'd say this is a guy who loved his wife. you can turn it into any kind of ugly story you want to. That's your business. I can't stop you. But I'm going to have nothing but pride for his courage in cleaning the mess up that wasn't his creation. So anyway, it's not really that challenging a subject if you're just really talking about what the nature of harm is. And the fact is that all you're looking for is what's the real harm, and it's all circumstantial. Every circumstance has its own little nuances. And it's a little bit ridiculous to say you're going to write some general rule that's going to fit in all circumstances. All right, so I'd also say that all of these people who talk about violence and just ignoring reality. So if we were back in World War One, and the fact is you could kill Hitler, but you have to kill Eva Braun, and let's say there are five illegitimate kids or something that nobody knew he had. You know, five adopted kids are in the same palace, along with all his 25 dogs, and you're going to have to kill all of them. Well, you know you would accept the collateral damage. We accept it all the time. I mean, in every war we've had over the last 15 years, we've accepted tons of blown up wedding parties and all kinds of other things. All kinds of children and wives have been killed to get to our terrorists. So what is this bullshit? So I guess these people would condemn any war, any kind of circumstance where you use decisive violence. And again, I'm not defending it. I'm not saying it has any part of any mission statement. Is any of this ever required? Because I say you should be able to negotiate solutions to your conflicts. And I would certainly make every effort to have a negotiated resolution. I'd talk to a rapist first before I'd kill him. Okay, but if he's going to be emphatic that he has some right to do it, then yeah, maybe it's going to come to him getting shot, and I'll just use a, you know, Dirty Harry line. You know, if I see a naked man with an erection chasing a woman with a butcher knife, I shoot the fucker. Yeah. So, you know, really just, this is just about, do you acknowledge that the future is going to be full of victims that you have a right to protect? And if you don't acknowledge that, then yeah, we're talking about two different subjects. I mean, as stated, do these people have any brains at all? I mean, if in some future date, 70% of the children raised in the internet enlightened environment realize it's better to be vegetarian or vegan than to incarcerate animals and torture them, and they decide to pass laws saying it's against the law to incarcerate an animal and torture it for food, have they violated something? Are they criminals? So, you know, this is so frickin' stupid. You know, this whole, you know, the whole atmosphere in which people are arguing is just so distorted and perverted and unreal. So anyway, let's play along. They'll get to it eventually. So marzipan is the gerbil or whatever. And they don't even make it clear that marzipan is pregnant with, you know, Evapan and Adamapan. I mean, you know, this could mean something if this is a pregnant guinea pig, but if it's the last guinea pig, you know, then extinction is already going to happen. So you're not causing its extinction. I mean, the whole thing is just really under thought out.
In this episode of Philosophy Matti Interviews, my guest is David Benatar, the author of books such as Better Never to Have Been, The Human Predicament, and Very Practical Ethics, known as the founder of Contemporary Antinatalism. On the Exploring Antinatalism podcast channel, he needs no further introduction. Happy to have you here, David. Welcome.
Thank you very much. Nice to be with you.
Your 2006 book, Better Never to Have Been, is important to the international community of antinatalists. It is for many the first and for some the only academic source to the philosophy and theory of this way of thinking. Different people have, however, interpreted the book differently. One notable difference that I've seen...
All right, so the only thing in the book that's more than, you know, the generic argument about optimism bias versus pessimism, concern about pain versus pleasure and conflicts about those subjects, was the asymmetry. The idea of establishing this idea that not having a good, all right, is not a bad. It's just a fact. It isn't being in prison. So not having a cupcake or something, a dessert, isn't a bad thing, okay, unless you need it, unless there's some deprivation that you're going to endure. So if you don't get something that you don't need, you haven't lost anything. It's a pretty clear argument. But always fixing a bad is a good. So anytime you eliminate a bad, you've created a good. But it doesn't work the other way around.
Being in how the role of killing, taking lives deliberately and intentionally.
So why is this a subject? I mean, we're nowhere near that point, right? I mean, there's no civil war imminent. There's lots of civil wars about other subjects that look pretty imminent, but there doesn't seem to be too much about this particular subject that indicating that there's some mass hysteria that's going to lead to, violence.
See, some think that no killing is allowed, others that the whole range of exceptions is possible.
So just the very idea of calling something killing, when obviously it depends on a circumstance whether you're doing something called killing. So you could have a lame horse and you shoot it. You're not killing the horse. It's not like some nasty act you're committing. You're completely doing it for these good practical reasons that the horse will endure a bunch of unnecessary suffering for a condition that can't be fixed, blah, blah, blah.
To seek clarity to this issue, I formulated an imaginary case. You have seen my short...
So imaginary cases. So we could do the real life cases. Is what's worse, euthanizing your pet or cutting its nuts off? imposing surgery is somehow okay, all right, but imposing a graceful exit isn't okay. And the reasoning is... So it's clearly not about harm, because obviously it's more harmful doing surgery because they have to wake up. They can't tell you how much pain medication they need. None of that's going to happen. They're going to be very miserable. And if you euthanize them, obviously there's no such negative repercussions. Their cancer cure will not be missed.
Videos on the Exploring Antinatalism podcast channel, my Marsipan Chronicles. The story there is that I'm the last human being alive, I'm dying soon, and my guinea pig companion Marsipan, also the last of her species.
So she's already gone extinct, okay? So there's no real subject here, right? There's no subject of extinction. She's already going extinct. So unless you're telling me she's pregnant with, Adama Pan and Eva Pan, nothing's going to happen here. There's no story. There's no ethical conflict except the obvious one. Why would I leave the poor animal to starve to death if I can engineer a graceful exit? It would be just plain ignorant, stupid, lame, uncourageous.
Although in good health now, would predictably live and die in misery without me. So my question to you is, would you and would better never to have been permit me to kill Marsipan, and on what considerations would the verdict be based on?
Thank you.
So his book really wasn't about ever acting on anything. It was just general statements, okay, ambiguous statements about, well, you're better off if, but I won't interfere with nature. So whatever nature says goes, blah, 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 some kind of crap like that. I won't do anything to implement a better world. I'll just say a better world is possible, but I won't engineer any way to ever get there.
Well, I think that the question you've posed in that video and now summarized is somewhat tangential to what I'm dealing with in Better Never to Have Been. I can explain.
So I don't see, it's only tangential in the sense of you're really just arguing about what's the nature of existence. And the nature of existence is just running away from failures, the negatives, trying to put off, just stay above water. And so once you're drowned, once you're doomed, once you already know you're going to sink, there's no point in the boat sinking any worse than it has to. Duh.
Why? But perhaps I should first of all say that I can't remember exactly what I've said in that book as distinct from other places. And I know that some of what has preoccupied you is the question about what I, in my incarnation in that book, would say about this particular problem. So given
so the book really should be universally relevant. And I would argue, having read it, that it is. There's no arguments in it that are especially challenging. So it's just basically arguing, are you a sympathetic person or are you an insatiable addict who's going to keep justifying chasing the heroin high?
This difficulty that I have in separating up what I've said there and what I've said elsewhere, I may just speak more generally. But from what I can recall, the question that you've raised is, I think, tangential.
You already said that.
To the content of the book. The book is really about procreation. It has implications for extinction.
So it's really about procreation, but it's really about, well, let's ideally convince everybody of this truth and there'll be no conflict. So it's completely unrealistic in that sense that you can especially convince animals, because you're not going to convince the animals. They can't understand the subject. They can't even understand your language. Do you understand that? Yeah, there's a real barrier there. You can't understand that barrier.
And in speaking about extinction, I've spoken about two different ways in which that can be brought about.
So we already know that it's already happening if it wasn't for third world yeah, trash. Okay. The you know, incessantly stupid, ignorant, dumbest humans on Earth, breeding way in excess to their capacity to even provide for their kids in any kind of decent way, educate them, make them into real citizens. No, there's nothing even close. So if it wasn't for them, the decision has already been made by the cultural choices people make being maturated in a civilized country. So if you're maturated in a civilized country and you receive an education, you might have a kid here and there. But the fact is, you're not going to have the two necessary. Everybody's not going to have those two kids. Every couple isn't going to have the two necessary. And so we're already going to go extinct. So completely passively it happens, all right, without any intervention of any kind. They don't even have to believe in ethicism or antinatalism to achieve the function. They're already functioning that way. So it's a huge irony of this conversation is that, oh, it's going to be this hard, awful task of driving these people to the truth when, no, they've already walked right into the truth. That if they're not interested, if you give them a choice, you know, a more interesting life, they choose the more interesting life than nataling. That's the absolute truth. Yeah. So this conversation is sort of moot in that sense of the choice is already going to be made if you educate human beings. But if you don't educate human, if you don't educate children and you keep letting poor people decide the fate of the human race, you let them drive the bus. Yes, they're going to drive it into horrific catastrophe.
The one is through not creating new lives, and the other is by killing existing lives.
So again, this idea that anybody in this has to happen, the only existing lives that would have to be overtly decided for them, okay, is the animals, because they can't understand. I could give them the pill choice, and they're not going to understand the pills. You know, they're not going to understand any of it. So, you know, they don't have the capacity to make a reasoned judgment. And the simple truth is, as the educated people who have gone to high school and who have maybe gone to college, you're very qualified to judge what's in their best interest. You're not less qualified, you're more qualified, just a fact.
And so when I deal with extinction through killing, I'm really dealing with killing in the context of extinction.
And so just turn the words around and say the same thing in reverse, okay?
And in general, I'm opposed to killing, to bringing extinction.
So again, this, I'm opposed, generally I'm opposed to killing. Yeah, everybody could say, yeah, I'm opposed to dirty dishes. I'm opposed to having to go poo-poo. I'm opposed to a lot of facts of life, okay? So, but let's not pretend that we can have, you know, a civil society without reward and punishment and all these certain unpleasantries. Yeah, there's some things that you have to, you know, break some eggs to make an omelet. You have to, you know, you have to accept some collateral damage to have a dead Hitler.
About by way of killing beings. The case that you present is a case in which the guinea pig species will become extinct as a result of my killing marzipan if I...
No, he's going to be extinct anyway, so it's not even a subject. It's not an internally living guinea pig. Yeah, it's doomed either way. And all you're saying is will I let it die badly or will I allow it to die gracefully?
Do you decide to kill marzipan? But I don't think that the decision to be made there is primarily one about extinction.
It's not at all about extinction, because he didn't make the argument about extinction by making marzipan pregnant. If he made it pregnant, then you'd have a moral question. I'm causing the end of the marzipan line. There won't be any more marzipan thingies. Yeah. To me, the decision is still easy. But I'm just saying it's, you know.
It's primarily about the well-being of marzipan. As I understand the way you've described this case, marzipan...
So this is, you know, again, this is so... It cheats the argument so much, because we know this is like a virus or something. This is like smallpox Mary or whatever. This is, you're really having a conversation about something that you can nip it early and save trillions. You know, a little bit of pain now, huge gain later. So it's just a fact. And for them to all pretend they don't know those kind of facts exist, that you can pay a tiny price today and gain a huge benefit tomorrow, is ridiculous, Frank. It's just ridiculous.
It's fine at the moment and will continue to be fine after I die. But at some further point in the future, she's going to suffer very badly if I don't euthanize her before I die. And so what I take this to be is really a case of euthanasia.
Yes, exactly. That's all that. That's the only relevant question in the way he phrased it. So that is unfortunate. They left you a door to run out of, and Benatar is going to run out the door.
But not in the paradigmatic sense where we are now or imminently dealing with a being whose life is so bad that death would be the lesser of two evils. Instead, we're dealing about a much more enhanced prophylactic kind of euthanasia, where you're killing now to prevent a great deal of suffering in the further future. And that, I think, does present special difficulties.
So again, this is just ridiculous in the context of a world that incarcerates animals, brutalizes them, and then murders them. So again, you know, to have this conversation when the opposing side endorses all of those kinds of trespasses and murders, and this asshole can't say, of course you put the little fucking critter out. You don't sit there and let it die of an infection or some other kind of blight. It's just cruel and stupid. You leave it to nature, you put it on nature's gurney and say, go ahead, have at it, nature. Give it its, do your worst to it. You know, tumors popping its eyes out of its head. Yeah, you leave it vulnerable to all of that. For some principle? There's no principle. God, I can't believe how he's become such a weak whitewasher.
So let me leave it there for now and see if you have anything to say about the way I've set up this problem.
Yes, we...
I'd say you're ridiculous. In the context of what we have seen on this planet, you're going to say that you realistically could live this way? I mean, what are you going to start doing, the Jane thing? I mean, maybe that's why we won't see Benatar, because he's got his burqa on, okay, and he's, you know, he's breathing through a device so he doesn't inhale any microbes that he might kill. I mean, how far are you going to take this nonsense?
We can, for all I care, we can forget about extinction.
I mean, just think of the collateral damage of our own existence on animals where we inadvertently kill them all the time just to have what we want, a clean reservoir and this and that and all this other stuff. All kinds of animals are sacrificed all the time. And we can't euthanize one fucking guinea pig out of sympathy? Not because we want to murder it, not because we want to suck its blood. No, because we want to spare it harm. And we can't do it because Benatar says so. Oh, fuck. It's so disappointing. Everybody turns to shit. It's just, you can't depend on nothing.
Yeah, because I did find out in my chronicles in the second part that although you make the distinction between killing extinction and dying off extinction and apply it only to humans and not explicitly to non-humans and blah, blah, blah.
So that's not all true anyway. I mean, he starts his book, like the second page of his book says, everything I'm going to say about the human condition applies to animals.
On the next page I found that you are not that concerned about the species dying, even in the case of animal, non-human animal death, but you are more interested.
Yeah, it's okay if they die because nature did it. So this is the idiocy of it. If nature murders and slaughters, it's okay, it's acceptable. But if we do it rationally and out of sympathy, ooh, that's a terrible idea. No, it's not.
In their death and the badness of that. As for your euthanasia plan, and I'm sort of reading that you might go along with that. I'm happy to see that you agree with yourself or your artificial intelligence representation, David Benatar's philosophy guide. I asked them the same question and received essentially the same answer.
What was the answer exactly? I think he said as long as it's not tomorrow, that the thing's going to die, that you can't euthanize it.
That you are giving between the lines. Noting that you don't explicitly discuss a case like this in Better Never to Have Been, the bot concluded that your broader ethical framework is likely to morally permit, if not endorse, that was added by the bot, the preemptive euthanasia of marzipan as a means of preventing future suffering.
Yeah, only if it's going to die in a week. But if it's going to die in 10 days, well, now you're out of luck. You can't euthanize it.
For the designers of the bot, I'm sure. Perhaps the closest that you come to this case in the book is abortion. You argue that human embryos and...
Why do we have to do this? You know, fetuses, which are less than bugs, I mean, their brains are not working. They're not ready for prime time. Now we're just having a conversation about the ethics of killing a microbe almost. There's nothing there yet. The whole brain is squished going through the birth canal. The whole skull squishes. The whole thing ain't ready yet.
Fetus is already in some kind of existence, should be aborted before they acquire an interest in their own lives. And you go on to argue that some late-term abortions of the development of consciousness and even some instances of infanticide may be morally desirable if they prevent the continuation of particularly unpleasant existence.
So yes, it's all his standards. Like, you know, anybody has to develop a standard of some kind, I suppose. But the whole point is you, what judgment are you applying? You have to always measure what you're giving up, which according to Benatar is nothing. That's the asymmetry, all right? The goods don't add up into anything because they're just satisfying negatives that shouldn't exist in the first place. So you're just cleaning up a mess you shouldn't have made in the first place. And you expedite the whole process by just preventing the mess being made in the first place, then you don't have anything to clean up.
I'm trying to establish the proper boundaries of the legitimacy of killing here.
All right, why? Why do we need these boundaries? So first off, the entire civilized world is on the direct course for extinction. It's going right towards it. That's its choice. It's already chosen extinction without even believing in the cause. So let you know, just to, in case you would start to get a few more people to understand the actual cause, you can understand that it can only get better. You know, they can only get a straighter line to that end, and no coercion involved. So the only thing we have to fix is stupidity, ignorance. Ignorant people are the problem.
Really? So my question to you is,
animals are the problem.
Are the moral justifications that you would use the same or the different in the cases of abortion and infanticide on the one hand, and euthanizing marzipan on the other hand, if you go?
So he's trying to make a distinction between killing a healthy guinea pig to prevent its unnecessarily sloppy life and death, and the more urgent need. You know, you have a kid born with a giant tumor in its head or something, where, yeah, it would just be nicer to just let him go. Turn off the respirator.
And to be euthanized.
I think if we're speaking about abortion prior to the emergence of sentience.
Yeah, well, when is that? You're going to say something sentient while it's still in the womb? Yeah. Come on, too ridiculous.
Then we're speaking about preventing a being from coming into existence. And that would be unlike the case of marzipan.
That would just be killing it. That'd be stepping on an egg. Yeah, it's not a real big moral dilemma.
Marzipan as a sentient being already exists as a sentient being.
So anyway, this whole idea that some kind of sentient being has some sort of autonomy and all this crap, when we know we're all robots anyway, and we're just saying, what should control the behavior of robots or the destiny of robots? The best intelligence we can find are stupid fucking DNA desires. Duh.
And so that's not a case, killing her was not a case of preventing her existence. It's preventing a continued existence, in other words, killing her. So it's not like abortion through most of pregnancy. Once we're speaking about a sentient fetus or a...
So whatever that is, so he believes in sentient fetuses. They're drowning, right? Yeah. Well, whatever. It's really pushing it. It's pushing the concept of what it is to be a feeling being to start applying it to these robots that aren't fully integrated. The software hasn't been downloaded. It's not a real iPhone yet.
Fortiori, a neonate. Now we're speaking about terminating a life. And so then...
So all you have to do is figure out what the rational definition of harm is. And there's no rational definition of harm.
I think the question is whether continued existence is worse than death or the other way around. Now,
so you wrote a book called Better Never to Have Been, and then you say, well, maybe it's not true. Yeah, okay. Just amazing duplicity.
In most cases where we are thinking about euthanasia of neonates, for example, we're thinking about beings who are now suffering very badly. And so the decision is in some sense easier in those cases. It's still not easy, because these are very difficult questions to answer.
No, they're only difficult for people who have difficulty with them. It's like the sight of blood or something. So for some people, it's not very difficult, because they just say, well, what's the value, positive value, hope, versus the negative value, catastrophe? And it's really easy to recognize the risks way outweigh any hope of a happy ending. Yeah, a happy outcome. This is like opening a bottle of anthrax. You just say, no, let's not open it. I mean, there's just nothing good that's going to happen. And I think most rational people can see those circumstances where this ain't a bottle you want to open.
Because there's more than one component question. One component question is, how bad is the suffering from the subjective point of view? And that's often hard to determine. It's often hard to get into the mind.
Yeah, well, it's even harder, again, if I'm having to live by your standards. So who's deciding what suffering is and all of that crap? And so you have to just use your best judgment. My best judgment as a living being, I know that I'd pay $1 billion to evade dying a certain horrible death. And I would, you know, I'd sacrifice whatever I had to sacrifice. You could take pieces of my good memories away, events in my life. You could take them away. You know, if I could buy my way out of the bad shit. So I'm going to use my best judgment.
Of another being, even if it's a human baby, but even more so if it's of another species, it's hard to get into the mind. And another question to ask is, well, how bad is death? And that's a whole nother question that people can disagree.
So we know this is a silly conversation. We know if you die in your sleep, death is nothing. It's absolutely a non-event. You go to sleep and you don't wake up. Well, shit, that's a non-event in terms of any sentient equation or any feeling, harm, blah, 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 blah. And the only other question is this social contract kind of stuff. Well, we're invested in our lives. We get to choose. We have some autonomy, blah, blah, blah. And that's all true. But that doesn't apply to animals. It's just ridiculous to say they have an investment in their continued existence because they were busy building something. What? What were they building? Well, they weren't going anywhere except getting closer to their own death and some kind of disease or something was going to kill them. I've watched hundreds of animals die, and there's nothing good about it. If it can be evaded, a natural death, then evade it, because it's bad news.
I agree about it. Some people think that death is not bad at all for merely sentient beings. I actually think that death is pretty bad.
So I don't understand. How is death bad? If you fell asleep and you didn't wake up, how exactly is that a bad thing happening to you? So he won't have any answer to that except, well, I was going to write another really great book, and mankind would be so much better off. If you can make that argument, but I don't think you can make that argument, frankly. I think you're done. Your utility has been squeezed out of you.
For merely sentient beings, but that's another component question. And then you've got to put these together in order to.
So what's this nearly sentient crap? Why is this a subject? The nearly sentient? What the hell fits in that category? How do you know there's such a thing as a nearly sentient? I mean, I would argue that rational biological science would say the first sentient beings, it was probably way too loud, okay? The sentience was way too loud. I mean, the sensations were horrifically, almost catastrophically loud. And it's only through time that it's been tempered into something survivable.
Work out whether death is in the overall interests or against the overall interests of the being.
Yes, you're all going to die, and it's just basically saying, well, is there something you're going to accomplish in living? And again, the title of his book is Better Never to Have Been, but somehow I guess he's arguing that it's fine to keep continuing. Better never to have been, but keep on going.
The Fuzzy Pan case is so complicated, further complicated.
It couldn't be more obvious and simple. How can this at all complicated? It's either going to die an unknown risky death or a certain peaceful death. And all you're saying is which one is best for the stupid guinea pig who doesn't really know the difference and couldn't care less and all that kind of crap. They live for the moment. It's not going to matter. There's no tragedy here.
Because she's fine now, and she will be for the foreseeable future. And that's a problem in itself, but it also introduces...
So foreseeable future, they live 3 fucking years, too, to boot. You know, a lot of these things, they don't live very long anyway. So you ought to be bleeding for them, your heart ought to be bleeding for them, that they have to go through this death cycle so many more times than we do. In 90 years, you know, for rats, that's, you know, 40 rats have to get killed. If you were a rat, you'd have to die 40 times.
This is a further problem, and that is how in the real world I would know that her end was going to be so bad.
Yes.
All right, so we know that that's the high probability, not the low probability. An unpleasant death is the high probability. Very rare that the guinea pig just drops dead of a heart attack.
Well, your bot used the term preemptive euthanasia, which was kind of surprising to me. But I do get your point that early abortion is the odd one out.
Oh, please. This is so fucking... so off the subject.
Here, because that's when sentience hasn't set in, then late abortion and infanticide.
I'm just saying it's a fact that you could have a perfectly rational conversation about the fact that, frankly, humans aren't sentient even after birth. All right, in any way like we are. They don't even know what gravity is. They haven't connected to anything. They're just gurgling machines. They got nothing. There's no coherent sensate organism there. They're merely reflexive reactions that are supposed to get mothers and fathers to pay attention to them, and that's it. They don't have any coherent functioning. I mean, coherent to them having an identity and a welfare. It just doesn't, it doesn't work that way.
And marzipan are similar in that sentience case anyway. Well, at this point, it might be useful to make a distinction. Now, early human abortion, late human abortion, human infanticide, and non-human euthanasia may in some instances be morally justified, but they do not necessarily fall under your definition of antinatalism.
So what is this really? I mean, what does this have to do with this subject, which is, should human beings and the animals on Earth, should this experiment, this biological experiment performed by the scientist called nature, be discontinued? All right, that's the subject. And again, the subject is kind of moot because it's already been answered by intelligent humans that have something better to do than natal. They choose to do something better. Fact.
In our definition panel last year, and I think that Better Never to Have Been did sort of imply this, you said antinatalism, noun, is the view that it is morally wrong to bring sentient beings into existence.
So again, they still haven't figured out not to use this morally wrong, like morality derived from where? It's an ethical statement, it's a value equation. All right, it's just wrong. It doesn't have to be morally wrong, it's just wrong. It's a crime against the being you're imposing on.
And this gives rise to some follow-up questions on and around the marzipan case. To begin with, is any of the cases discussed so far antinatalism? I mean, early abortion may be the best candidate as it prevents the emergence of sentience and hence all and any pain that could be experienced in the future by the being whose life is terminated. But then the being, without pain but nonetheless, has already been brought into some kind of existence.
So I mean, all this is just so, you know, who's good guy, bad guy, right? So I mean, you're just arguing that, well, the mad scientist that does the thing that should, the outcome you want, then he's a brilliant mad scientist, right? I mean, but you get into all kinds of bizarre thought experiments. What if you mix some chemistry together and it turns out that it makes women's eggs shrivel up? Doesn't harm them in any way, just makes their eggs shrivel up. what's the equation? Am I Mengele now? Am I some kind of, you know, monster?
And I wonder if you could help me out here conceptually. So my question is, how can this case, early human abortion, best be understood as an instance of antinatalism or something else?
Well, the way you just summarized the question seems different from the question that I thought you were asking in the lead up to the summary. So let me deal with the way you formulated towards the end first, and then I'll come to the other. The antinatalism doesn't, I think, imply a particular view about early abortions. As I say in the book, or at least...
So I don't know how it couldn't be a statement. I mean, you're aborting it for a reason. If your reason is to prevent its existence, then that's antinatalism. I mean, fuck. It's just too ridiculous.
As I recall saying in the book, you have to combine antinatalism with some view about when somebody comes into existence in a morally relevant way. If you combine antinatalism...
Why does it have something to do with people coming into existence when all you're basically saying is if I can prevent a pregnancy, then I prevented 500 other pregnancies or 10,000 other pregnancies? So, you know, that's the math of it. And I didn't have to do anything to prevent all of those. So I didn't have to make any moral decision about any of that. I didn't have to do anything.
With the view that conception is the time when somebody comes into existence in a morally relevant way, then no...
Well, why are you doing this? I mean, so now he's going to give the God-botherers some kind of credible argument here somewhere that somehow their fable is somehow applicable? Shit.
Abortions amount to preventing somebody from existing.
Then it's already immoral to do anything to mitigate against a horrible death, right? Because you're interfering with God's will. So we should believe that we're all supposed to die as badly as possible to show how much we love God. Fuck you. Fuck this bullshit conversation.
All abortions would then amount to killing somebody. If, on the other hand, you take the view that I happen to take, which is that we come into existence in a morally relevant way when we become sentient.
Well, yeah, and you're not going to define when that is, so there's no point in having the conversation because you're not going to tell us when you think that happens.
Then, if you combine that with antinatalism, then we ought to abort in the early stages because we're actually preventing...
So if he thought we become... I sincerely don't think we become sentient till you're more than 2 years old, so frankly, in any kind of relevant way. But at least 1 year old, let's say. So the first year after you're born, I'm saying you're not sentient in a relevant way.
...a being from coming into existence rather than from terminating a being.
But I'm not allowed to act on my judgment. He can act on it when he decides when it's sentience, it's legal. But when I decide based on my definition of sentience, it's not legal. Bullshit, right? Yes, bullshit.
But this is not the...
Look, the simple point is you don't want to ever have to impose, even on imposers. So even to stop imposers, you don't want to impose. You don't want to have to shoot the rapist. You don't want to have to shoot anybody. But the whole point is, and we're nowhere even close to having to do any of that. So why is this the conversation? It just seems that you're just playing into the hands of the people who want to pretend this is some sort of act of violence, just like people call suicide self-hatred and an act of violence against the person's self and all of that kind of lie and fib and bullshit, right? When it's just their love of their own dignity and trying to preserve it. And so they get disgustingly lied about. And so all these people are doing is having some conversation about the lies told by somebody that there's some sort of violence on the horizon here, that this subject somehow invokes violence. It doesn't invoke anything of it. There's no sign of it. It's just a lie. And here they are indulging in the lie. For what reason?
The question I thought you were asking in the lead up to the summary of the question. I thought you were asking, well, really, what's the relevance of antinatalism to the case of marzipan? And that brings me back to the opening remarks that I made, which is I don't think there's a connection here. I think the question you're posing to me about marzipan, that case, that dilemma, is really not distinctively antinatalist at all. I don't think that what divides people here is going to be whether they're antinatalists or not. I think what's going to divide people here are the other questions that I enumerated.
What do you enumerate? Clearly, it's just a question about euthanasia because you're not really causing the extinction of the guinea pig for the purpose of extinction. So again, if we kill it because not because of sympathy, but because we want to end the existence of guinea pigs, then it's a question. And again, in the world that exists, with all the accepted collateral damage that exists, every single thing we do, like I said, every technology we have, when we apply it, it kills animals. It harms them, it tortures them, it mashes them, it crashes them, it does all kinds of things to them all over the place. All of our technology is a menace to some living creature somewhere. So this whole conversation that this one guinea pig deserves all of this attention and all of that that we've accepted because it's convenient, I mean, it's this whole thing is trivially fucked up. It's just such a stupid conversation.
The how bad is death for marzipan? And then there's the point about the preemptiveness. Funny
that- right, and so if you don't believe it's better never to have been, then there's no point in, yes, you don't just go ahead and just say live livers. You know, it's alive, keep it alive. For no good reason, of course. The fucking guinea pig. You know, it's not going, it's not doing anything. There's nothing, you know, this is just nonsense to say it needs to live. It doesn't need it.
The bot, I want to hear more about this bot in due course, but I have used that term before, maybe not in print, but I have used the term of preemptive euthanasia. So I do see this as a case of preemptive euthanasia, and there'd be questions around the challenges of that. But I don't think that's got anything to do with antinatalism.
Yes, the case of marzipan is not a case of antinatalism as such, and I agree with you in there. Now,
right, so why did you bring up this whole subject? Why is this a question for Benatar to answer? Is he some sort of euthanasia expert? No, I don't think so. Has he added anything to a euthanasia conversation? No, we just saw he just added the bullshit of saying, well, somehow you have to respect religious opinions and blah, 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 and you have all this stuff that we have to consider, blah, 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 blah. And I'm going to make the decision based on my understanding of when something is sentient and when something needs to live. Whatever the fuck that could possibly be made out of, this need to live thing. Like any animal could possibly manifest a need to live. Of course they can't. They need food, they need air, they need water, they need certain things, but they don't need to live.
As a word of explanation, I am, as you well know, I'm an applied ethicist and a bioethicist. So when we talk about unconscious violinists in hospital beds being kidnapped during the night to save some other people's life, we are, of course, talking about abortion. And when we are talking about Nicias drowned in a bathtub, we are, of course, talking about euthanasia. So
Nicias drowned in a bathtub? What the hell is he talking about? Oh, fuck.
We're always talking about something else. My apologies for that one.
Yeah, so you totally messed the subject up. Total failure. Okay, wasted everybody's time. Thank you very much.
I think that in this question, I understand your train of thought, but it sounds a little complicated. And maybe my confusion here stems from the fact that better never to have been for me has always been a combination of three interrelated but separate things. Deep pessimism, your view that life and death are both bad.
So again, dying is bad. Death isn't bad. So again, it's just ridiculous to say death is bad for somebody who's dead. It can't be. They're dead.
Human and sentient extinctionism, the view that it would be better if humanity became extinct, that's what somebody says in the back cover. And my argument applies not only to humans, but also to all other sentient beings. That's what you said on page 2. And then the third thing is...
So he says it on page 2. So I kept referencing it. I remember reading the book and I said right from the beginning, okay, he gets it. It's about animals. You know, he's going to use humans as examples, blah, blah, blah. But this is about being sentient on Earth. It's not about being human on Earth. It's about being sentient on Earth. And humans are the ones that are smart enough to make the decisions. And so I said, okay, he gets it. But apparently he didn't get quite as much as I thought he did. Yeah, apparently he didn't get any of it. Apparently he said it for no good damn reason, because he doesn't believe... it's necessary to protect those victims, and he doesn't think we're, because of our intelligence, the accountable authority that must do it.
Watching antinatalism, the view that people should not have children, obviously, but what if anything else? And my question to you before we go back to Marzipan and her friends is, looking back now, in your judgment, was Better Never to Have Been a treatise on pessimism or extinctionism or antinatalism or a combination thereof?
It was the asymmetry. It was the zero-sum argument, as I call it. That, yeah, goods are really just made out of getting rid of the bads. And the only good you can miss is one that was made out of the removal of a bad.
Or something else altogether.
I think it's a treatise primarily on antinatalism, but I think that a pessimistic view about the quality of human life is a central part of the argument.
So pessimistic relative to silly optimism. So again, to call it pessimism is almost conceding the argument that it's not realism. Instead, it's negative. No, it's not bent or distorted. It's just being realistic about the limitations of this event that we're participants in. That it's all visceral and hungry for us because we're struggling to stay above. We don't want to drown. And so we're just trying to keep out of the negatives. And obviously dying has a lot of implications of it being a negative experience. You don't want to... you know, you don't want to die before you've cleaned your life up. You know, you know, there's a movie about you know, some murderers and all that kind of stuff, and then when they were going to hang the guy who did it, a very famous book, you know, story. Well, anyway, you know, he was worried about poo in his pants when he got hung. You know, you're just like, yeah, you know, it's very funny. You know, he, you know, murders a whole family, but he can't deal with poo in his pants.
For that conclusion. And then extinctionism is an implication of the antinatalist conclusion.
All right, thank you. So returning to Marzipan and her kind, she is a non-human created by humans and in human care. We have established here, I believe, that I'm morally permitted probably to kill her, if by doing so I can prevent a particularly unpleasant future existence that makes it sort of similar to...
But he was saying that, no, you can't predict it. So unless you know she's got some cancer genes, you can't do it.
To the infanticide and late abortion cases. Now, that, according to your definition, is probably not a paradigmatic case of antinatalism. But the fact that she shouldn't exist in the first place is, no question about it. If it's morally wrong to bring sentient beings into existence, it is morally wrong to create companion and production.
Yeah, well, that's the whole problem, though. One is different than the other. You can't fix one by, you know, breaking, so to speak. So, yeah, once it's created, then you have this obligation to respect the existence of it. So you can't just say it's invalid, it shouldn't have existed, therefore I can kill it. That's not going to work. You have to have a good reason to, and the good reason is the sensible, your best judgment reason that it's subject to less risk and harm. It's the long-term winner choice.
Animals to fulfill human...
You minimize possible losses, which is the best thing a human being can do.
Desires, which seems to make Better Never to Have Been a strong declaration not only against human reproduction, but also against factory farming, animal husbandry, and the non-human pet market. Why am I seeing things in the wrong light here somehow? The question to you is Better Never to Have Been an ode to vegan abolitionism?
Not explicitly, but I'm not denying that there are connections there. So I certainly do think that it is wrong to bring animals into being in order to kill them and eat them. But it's sort of overdetermined here because it would be wrong to create them in the first place on the ordinary antenatal.
So this whole thing is just wrong, and would it be criminal? would it be possible for us to pass laws against it and to punish people who violated those laws, to do violence against them? So again, they're just such hypocrites. I'm arguing, of course, if the democracy has well-defined the crime, then it's legitimate as a social contract. Now, I'm saying even without the social contract, it's quite obvious. I don't think there's any rational arguments that can be made. All people can make is religious arguments, but they can't make any rational arguments stating that something actually does, in fact, need to live. That there needs to be human beings on planet Earth. It's an idiotic argument, because there doesn't need to be Saturnites on Saturn, and there doesn't need to be Martians, and there doesn't need to be Venetians, and there doesn't need to be any of this shit. Quite obviously. Anyway, call that a part one, and not very exciting, must say, right? It's just a bunch of abstract, barely connected drivel. All right, so till the next time and such and so forth and whatnot.